I am going to be reading from the book of Ruth, chapter 2, 8 to 12. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Do not go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Today, Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge."
If you could, take your bulletins, and if you have very good eyes, let's read our theme verse, which is at the top of this page. From 1 Timothy, I'll have to hold it out here. Let's read it together. "Exercise daily in God, no spiritual flabbiness, please. Workouts in the gym are useful, but a disciplined life in God is far more so, making you fit both today and forever. You can count on this. Take it to heart." So, no spiritual flabbiness. We are in the midst of a series on disciplines, spiritual disciplines. And we have the scale up here and a weight to remind us that physical fitness is important, but really being disciplined in our faith is most important. And we talked about prayer, and we've talked about last week's submission, which is a hard one. And this week, the worship committee decided to take three spiritual disciplines that we maybe don't think of as spiritual disciplines, but they are. Hospitality, opening ourselves and welcoming others, can be a spiritual discipline and practice, because the opposite of that is kind of selfishness and just taking care of yourself. Simplicity, choosing to just have enough and not taking more, is a spiritual discipline. And the third one is, help me out here, service. Serving others in the name of Christ is a spiritual discipline. And this church kind of excels at hospitality. You're very good at welcoming people and reaching out to people. You also excel, I think, in service. I had Mary and Anita at my house this week serving Bruce and I by cleaning and trying to do some work at the house. And we then in turn fed them lunch, which is a way of hospitality. And so we practice these things all the time without thinking about them, but thinking about being intentional about them. So what we decided to do is ask three different people to share a little bit about each of these. And we're going to have Mark share first, and he's going to share about service. And then maybe Deb will come in. She's a little nervous about sharing about hospitality, so it's still up in the air. Esther might be sharing for Deb. She's here, but like not in this building because she's not in this sanctuary because she was so nervous. And then Carolyn will share about simplicity. So Mark, if you would come.
So good morning. "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." So we talked about Ruth this morning. We talked about the story of Ruth, and we'll give you the Cliff Notes version of Ruth. So mom, husband, wife, husband, and two sons flee a place, Judah, Bethlehem, where there's famine, and they go to Moab. And in the course of time, husband dies. sons marry, and over the course of time, sons die as well. Famine in Judah is over, and Ruth and her daughter-in-laws choose to go back to where they came from. But in the course of time, like I said, Ruth decides that her daughter-in-laws should actually go back and spend the rest of their lives where they actually came from, and encourage them not to follow her, but to go back. And one daughter, although at first she hesitated, one daughter-in-law decided that she was going to do that. The other one, Ruth, said, "Nope, I'm going to follow you back to where you belong, and where your people will become my people, and I'm going to stay with you, and your God is going to become my God, and I am going to follow you back and be with you. You have given me so much, I'm going to follow you." So they did that. They went back. But here are two women, no men in their lives, going back, powerless, kind of, and they decided to settle back in Bethlehem, in Judah. No food, no power, no way to support themselves. And we talked, Esther talked about the Boaz. So they go back and they decide, Ruth decides that she's going to support the family by gleaning in the fields, by following the harvesters in the fields and picking up the grain. In Israelite law, the fields were cordoned off and the quarters of the field were not harvested. So it was sort of a welfare, if you would, for folks that were powerless or didn't have enough. So Ruth decided that she was going to follow and glean in the fields, pick up after, and harvest the corners of the fields which were not harvested. And she did this. And Boaz, the man who had many, many, many fields, saw her and asked his men, "Who is this person?" And they described her, said that she had come back and that she had been in the fields long from sun up to sundown, gleaning the fields, and he went and talked to her, and we heard the story about that. Now, my part of the service is to talk about service. So there's all sorts of examples of service here. The service that Ruth provided for Naomi, the service of providing for her, of gleaning, of feeding, of taking her time and effort to provide for Ruth. The service of Boaz to Ruth. They eventually ended up marrying, and Ruth ends up being the great-grandmother of David, I think, right? So she's in the line of the Messiah, this refugee. Service is all around in this story, and Boaz's service by providing and enabling Ruth to give to Naomi and so that they could have sustainability for themselves. So that's the first part of the service that I would like to talk about. Our heritage, our Mennonite heritage, is strong in service. There's a book down in the library that if you haven't and you're interested in part of our heritage, there's a book called The Hammer Rings Hope. It's a story of Mennonite disaster service. It was born out of post-World War II. CPS, Civilian Project Services, people who did not serve in the military but chose to not go to war. Many men of our heritage, of Mennonite brethren, Quaker heritage, decided to serve in civilian public service rather than in the armed services. But after the war, there was some concern about how do we extend this out? How do we help people in real life circumstances? And Mennonite Disaster Service was born out of CPS. More than 50 years, this was 1950 that Mennonite Disaster Service started. So if you're interested in our heritage, in the heritage of service that the Mennonites have had over the course of time, this is a book that might be of interest to you. I also want to talk about our worshiping community as well and what we do here, personal examples or corporate examples of our worshiping community. We think about our friends Urban and Janet, who How many years ago now? You've been here how long, Rose? 2010. So 8 years. Prior to Rose coming, Urban and Janet felt called to support a family that was coming from a Karen family that was coming out of the refugee camps in Burma and ask us if we would walk alongside them in this endeavor. A form of service that they initiated and that we as a congregation walked alongside and followed through on that. Road cleanup is a form of service that we do that blesses the community. Our congregation blesses the community by road cleanup. Now, our relationship with Ripple, congregation was born out of this church, and our continued relationship with Ripple is a form of service. Also, our polity here, our governance here, is a little bit different than some other churches that I grew up in, certainly. We don't have pastor and deacons and that sort of hierarchical thing. Our identifying here as servant leaders, those who were called by the congregation to serve this congregation are named as servant leaders, not as deacons or elders or other kind of names there. So, a couple of personal examples that I would like to provide to you from what I see as forms of service. As I was going through school, I went to college for a year, and I quit school. My direction wasn't clear, and I quit school and worked as a butcher at Hatfield Packing for a period of time. And the person that I credit as probably being one of the most influential people in my lives was my boss in my department that I worked in at Hatfield Packing. And we would have breaks in the morning. I went in very early in the morning, so our breaks were early on. And his name was Ray Landis, and I got to know Ray a little bit, and we would sit and talk at break time. And he would ask me, how did you end up here, and all sorts of questions about my family and this and that and the other thing. And eventually the conversation turned around to, you know, this is a great place to work, but, there may be opportunities that you have that some folks here either don't have or can't act on right now. And he said, you should be clear about what your course is, where the course of your life can go and where you would like it to go. And as his wisdom kind of seeped into my brain, I decided that I needed to consider going back to school and finish up. So that wisdom, that ability to just be present in conversation and to be intuitive enough to talk to me, he encouraged me to do something different than what I was doing and actually go back to school and finish out. So that is part of my personal, that was his service to me in a kind of a different way. It wasn't hammering nails or building schools or doing anything like that, but that was part of his service to me and changed the course of my life. This is sort of a serendipitous one, and I wish Pam and Paul were here. A couple of weeks ago, Mother's Day weekend, Zachary came down to visit, and along with him came his new girlfriend. Her name is Veronica. At that point in time, she was training to run a half marathon. And she needed to, as part of her training over that weekend, she needed to find a course where she could run, I believe it was 10 or 11 miles. And she asked me if I knew a place where she could run. And I didn't. So we walked into Aardvark Sports Shop in downtown Bethlehem, because that's a running shop. And we were asking a young woman there if she had a course that was 10 miles long that Veronica could run. She said, oh, sure. She said, I can do that. That's no problem at all. She whipped out a piece of paper, and there was a course that she could run. She looked at me, and she said, you look very familiar. And I said, oh. I said, I don't know. Have you seen me at work, where I work? No, I don't think so. Have you seen me, in any other circumstance? And she finally said, where do you go to church? And I said, I go to Whitehall Mennonite Church in Whitehall up in Egypt. And she said, that's it. I know I knew you from there. I recognized your face from there. And she said, do you know Paul and Pam Fink? And I said, sure, I know Paul and Pam Fink. And she said, well, when I was younger, I was friends with Hannah, and we were classmates. And my direction, once again, was not very clear. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know where my life was leading me. And Paul and Pam Fink kind of took me under their wing and encouraged me to consider college. And when I said, sure, that's a great idea, they actually went further and took me out to LTRIC and helped me to get enrolled. And ultimately, they provided me with a vehicle so that I could work and go to school and do all this other thing. So I guess my point here is you never know the service that you do and how that ripples out and affects other people. Really, really surprising. I wish Pam and Paul were here, so I will tell them about that. But yeah, so that was another form of service that they provided somebody who was just a friend and directed them and directed that young woman's course. In closing, I would just like to say a couple of statements here, a couple of quotes. One is from Martin Luther King, Jr., and this is about a story, a parable that's very familiar with all of us, to all of us. And the young people and I talked about this in Sunday school a couple of weeks ago. But it's about the parable of the Good Samaritan. And this was Martin Luther King, Jr.'s quote. The first question the priest and the Levite asked was, if I stop and help this man, what will happen to me? But the Good Samaritan turned the question around. If I don't stop and help this man, what will happen to him? And the second quote that I have here, as far as service goes, is from Mahatma Gandhi. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. So Deb and I were commiserating downstairs that neither one of us enjoys being up front and that we both feel nervous. So we'll both do our best. My topic is simplicity. And in my kitchen, I have a picture. It has a stone jug. And out of the stone jug are just some branches with some simple flowers. And on the jug, it says, simplify. So simplicity is a practice that in my entire life I have valued. I grew up with my church teaching me that the Bible tells us to live a simple life. Sometimes I have been more successful than other times. One way that I was successful is when our family, after we had bought our first home, and it was a good starter home by American standards, it was fairly small, and my husband had a good job and the kids were getting a little bigger, I started hearing pressure. It's time to buy a bigger house. The pressure came from inside my family as well, and I said, no, I am not doing that. We have enough. This is enough space for us. That was one thing I held to, and I'm still in that home and happy I'm there today. but when I began to know refugees, not only Korean refugees, but other refugees from around the world, and see how their lifestyle was different than our American lifestyle, simplicity became a whole new understanding to me. And I saw that refugee families live very simply, basically because their resources are lower than some of us, but also I think it is something that they value. And understand better than we do in America that things are not that important. And that living with clutter in our homes just takes our time and focus away from more important things. And so I started looking at my home in a whole different way, and I'm still struggling. And I'll give you, I'm still struggling to simplify because our American culture is so close to us that we can't really see it many times. In our American culture, we get many messages, some that we don't even, aren't even conscious of, to buy, 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 because our economy is based on us spending. So if we spend a lot, as Americans, our economy is strong. So we get messages all the time, and we have to know that we're, that those messages are there. But one example that happened last week to me is I, for many, many years, have fed the hummingbirds. And when it was time that I knew the hummingbirds were coming back, I said to myself, am I putting up this hummingbird feeder this year? And I said, yeah. Sauce said to myself, Sauce and Galisi are visiting me, and it will be so nice if they, you know, can see the hummingbirds. So up it went, and I started, and when you feed the hummingbirds, you have to boil, you have to get, measure out sugar and water and boil it for 3 minutes. And so I started boiling the nectar, and I hung it up. And they came, and they had their visit, and the hummingbirds were there. And there comes a point in the season where I don't know if it's babies that are maturing, and the nectar starts going down fast. And so one morning before work, I discovered, uh-oh, it's empty. I got to boil nectar before I go to work. So I did that. And then I was also cooking rice. And then the rice got too dry on the bottom, and I said, okay, I'm going to boil some water in the tea kettle so I can pour it in the rice, just a little bit in the rice. So I put the tea kettle on the burner, turned it on high, put the lid down so it would whistle and let me know, and went off to the bathroom to get ready. Pretty soon the smoke detector comes on, and I come into the kitchen, and what I had done was I had put the burner on under the hummingbird nectar on high, and there was flame coming out from under the lid. So now I have to drag it onto my sink, and fortunately, it went out on its own. My pot is black. The lid is black. There's smoke all over the kitchen and the living room. I have to open my windows. I end up late for work. I come back from work that night, and I look at my pot, and I say, this pot is part of a set. I have had this set forever, and this is a good set, and I am not losing this pot. And I spend probably an hour scrubbing the lid, scrubbing the pot, getting the Brillo pad, taking a knife and trying to get the black plaques off. And I go to bed late that night, like 1 a.m. And, you know, I'm losing sleep. So my simple decision that I am going to hang a hummingbird feeder has really been taking time away from other things that might be more important. And I thought to myself, why did I hang this hummingbird feeder? And I have to admit to myself that it's those magazines with those Better Homes and Gardens magazines with those glossy pages that show that perfect home, and that's what I wanted. I wanted my home with in the woods with the beauty and the hummingbirds coming, but the hummingbirds can feed themselves. They don't need me to feed them. So the focus, living lives of simplicity, sets us free to receive God's gifts and to share them with others. How are we going to receive God's gifts when our life is full of busyness? When we're going to Walmart to buy stuff we don't need? When we're, you know, spending hours and hours over feeding the birds that can feed themselves? It's that kind of when I focus on my life and I compare it to the simplicity of other lives that I see while I'm working, I can see the folly in what I'm doing, but otherwise I couldn't. So I also want to emphasize that when Esther sent us the email to the three of us who are talking, and she gave us the scripture, and she said that Naomi, I'm using the right word, right? The right person, because I wasn't up here for the story. Naomi ate what she gathered, but she gave the rest to Ruth. Ruth and gave the rest to Naomi. Okay. And she didn't worry about keeping it, preserving it. How do I keep it fresh for tomorrow? Which we would probably have a tendency to do. But she gave the extra. And we can rely on God to provide what we need. And even the last line that Esther wrote in that email was, to provide what we need, not more. Not more than we need. And that, I think, is what we struggle with in America, is that we need to prepare. We think we need to prepare more than we need. Thank you.
Okay, so our final presenter is Deb, and she's speaking on hospitality, which those of you that know Deb know she could speak on hospitality or service. Probably not simplicity, because you like to go to Walmart, okay, or other places and gather lots of things. But speaking is not her favorite thing to do at all. So I'm going to owe her big after today. So, Deb, what is hospitality to you? What does it mean?
I'm just treating everybody the same. Oh, my, no, no.
Yeah, yeah, I'll just hold it here.
Treating everybody like their family. Like I know them and I want to help them. That's it.
Okay, so treating everybody like their family, that's what hospitality means. How does this bring you freedom in your life? Because it seems like it could get a lot more complicated.
And it does, but that I don't have to worry about my things. that was good from you. I couldn't quite figure it out. But that was it. So don't have to worry about me.
And can you give some personal examples of how hospitality has worked out in your life?
Well, there's a lot of bad, too. I help the wrong people. It gets me in trouble. But since about 10 years now, I've been helping kind of the right people, but still probably the wrong people. But they have good intentions. I have high hopes. The only my success one is Don. He came to church.
Yeah.
And I got some of them closed, but not here yet.
But we don't know. We don't know where
that's
that will
true,
come.
That's true, yeah. They go to church in Lee Heighton, too, that Jimmy guy.
Deb, how many people have you seen? How many people have you hosted in your home overnight, even though you don't have a guest room?
Oh, my strays.
She calls them her strays.
Four.
Okay, they're probably even more.
Well, probably, yeah. Those ones I committed to, four of them, yeah.
But you also learned hospitality a lot from Janet and Urban, right? Mm-hmm. And how did they show you hospitality?
Well, they just didn't. Invited the whole family anytime, all the time, whenever we wanted to.
And kept Tyler, too, for you when you were out.
Yes, they did, yeah. And Roy.
So how do you feel like God might use your hospitality?
No, I don't know that
wasn't a question. That wasn't a question Esther prepared. But I just want to say that I see in you God. Because God is so welcoming, and you welcome people just as they are, and you invite them in. And the way that you welcomed me as a pastor and welcomed me into your house, want to play games, want to do whatever, come to my house, you do. That's it. You make everyone feel like family. And so thank you for that. And I see God in you. All right, you're set free. She had like 6 pages written, but it's too hard for her to read. So I think that as we think about simplicity and service and hospitality, we don't think of them as, the next slide, please. We don't think of them as spiritual disciplines. Oh, that's really, really tiny. I'm going to help you read that if you can't. So thinking this week about experiments you might do in one of these. We've done prayer experiments. We've done submission experiments last Sunday. Some of these are for hospitality. Some of them are for simplicity. Some of them are for service. But the suggestions are, could you invite someone over for coffee or a meal this week? That would be, could be a neighbor, could be someone from church. Just taking time out of your life to do that. Hospitality also means you could encourage someone you encounter. And because hospitality is not always feeding people, even though it's a pretty awesome part of hospitality. It's making them feel welcome, welcoming the stranger. For simplicity, some suggestions that Esther came up with, clean out your closet and donate what you haven't worn this year. Walk through your house and thank God for all the things you do have and just be content with what you have already. Choose to not buy anything other than essentials for 1 week, or you could stretch it to 1 month or I remember Tom and Carolyn once did an experiment for a year where they only bought stuff from thrift stores, which isn't really hard for them because that's how they live their lives anyway. But and then for service experiments, do something for people you oversee, like employees or children, to serve them instead of just telling them what to do. Serve someone by fully listening to them and their needs, which is, I think, the example that Mark Whittemore gave of the man in the butcher shop. Or ask God for opportunities to serve in the community around you. So take a minute or two and just think about hospitality, simplicity, and service. What's an action that you could do this week? Remember, spiritual disciplines are things that we choose to do them out of love for God that then opens us up to God speaking to us in deeper ways. So think about that for a minute, and then we'll share with people around us what we're thinking about on these three topics. So take 1 minute. I hear some of you already talking because you can't wait. So turn to someone around you, and which of these sticks out to you that you might like to try this week? Maybe if you always do hospitality, choose a different one, or if you always serve, choose a different one. So share with those around you. So perhaps you can discuss this more downstairs around tables and fellowship time. One way that you all can serve is people that know, if you've never stayed after to clean up after fellowship time, you could raise your hand today. That's that. There you go. That's service, opportunity right there. So let's just say a short prayer just to ask God to keep forming in us that we can become more like Christ. Let's pray. God, thank you that through Jesus we see all of these modeled, a way of simplicity, a way of hospitality and welcome the stranger, and a way of service all the way to the cross, giving up everything for us. Keep forming in us your character so that we too can model for others what it means to follow Jesus in this life. So that it's almost like practice for when we're with him in glory forever. That his kingdom will come, that his will be done in our lives as it is in heaven. In Jesus' name, amen.